Land Without. This is Nikos. Today I'm with Caleb Porzio. How's it going today, sir?
It's going great. How about yourself?
Yeah, not bad. Pretty chill. Just working remotely as you do.
Nice.
But third week running. So are you home-based during this crisis, I guess?
Yeah, sort of. My wife and I, we go to Florida. We live in New York, in the U.S., and it's cold there in the winter. So we go to Florida for a couple of months in the winter. And so we're kind of here. You know, we're going to probably be going back sometime mid-next month, but maybe earlier if we feel like we won't be able to get home if there, you know, is an extreme lockdown or something. But yeah, but I actually work remotely. I've worked remotely for the last like 6 years, so this is no different than the rest of my, you know, normal life.
Oh, you should give us some pro tips.
Yeah. Pro tips. Basically making your office really good is super important. Having an office, a dedicated office, especially if you have kids, that's huge. You know, having your own dedicated space, good tech, like good webcam, good mic, you know, all that stuff, is really important. And what else? I know there's a couple other, headphones. That was one for me. I mean, I guess this applies to anybody even in an office, but having like good, headphones and mic for voice calls, cause you end up doing a bunch of calls, you know, is helpful. But yeah, I mean, good webcam, good internet, good setup, good posture, you know, standing desk, stuff like that. And then an office to reduce distractions. And that's about it, I think, for me.
Cool, buddy. And what about like healthcare and fitness?
Yeah, right. That's a good question. So I'm always oscillating somewhere on a wave of being really good at that stuff and being really bad at it. Cause it's easy to slip into the like get up and then go directly to the computer. And that is bad, but I do that more often than I care to admit, where you just get up and you want to jump right into your work. And then before you know it, it's lunchtime. Like you didn't eat any breakfast. You might not have even changed. Who knows? Like, you're working remotely. There's no proof of anything. And, yeah. So then you maybe eventually eat lunch and then you want to eat lunch, but you want to keep working. So you go and grab like junk from the fridge or order out or something. So I found it's really, really healthy for me to break up the day, making sure that, you know, shower, breakfast, a walk or something before I, you know, open up the laptop. Again, I don't always do that. Today I walked right to my computer, so full transparency, but stuff like that. Walking is huge. Taking walks is probably the biggest cure for some of the remote work problems.
I just had a Shiatsu Home Medics massager arrive today and it made such a difference to my back.
Nice. I have one right next to me. Yep, same one.
So you're quite a busy guy. You see, you've got a podcast and you've also got this several frameworks.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah,
I am definitely
about your podcast.
Yeah. So the podcast is called No Plans to Merge. My friend Daniel and I, when I started working at Titan, a Laravel agency, maybe three and a half, four years ago, I don't remember, started working there and got to hanging out with a coworker, Daniel. And we were like, let's start a podcast. We had 20% time at that company. Every Friday was 20% time so we could work on open source and whatnot. So we started a podcast called 20% Time. We recorded it every Friday, and that got pretty big in the Laravel community. And then I quit Titan, and we turned it into a different podcast called No Plans to Merge. And we pretty much do the same thing. Like every Friday, we hang out, we talk about tech, we talk about programming, we meander sometimes. It's just a really fun time, and it's sort of, we've been doing it for, I think, maybe 3 years now, 2.5 or 3 years or something. So, yeah.
Nice. So you're a veteran, you've got a longer time than me. So have you got any tips for people that want to start a podcast or how to grow it?
Yeah. Probably a bunch. Maybe the biggest thing is, with No Plans to Merge, here's maybe the two biggest tips I could offer. One, having a friend to do it with is huge because now you have two people making sure the thing gets done. And you have two people, you know, if I stop caring about the podcast, there's a good chance Daniel's going to ping me and be like, hey, let's record today, you know, or if it's just me, those things fall by the wayside. So that's huge. Right. Having another person to hold you accountable was definitely a big point. The other one is we have a pretty low production quality. I mean, we have good mics, we have good setups, but maybe production quality is not the right word. We're pretty informal. So usually it's one big cut. You know, we do add intro music and outro music, and we've had sponsors occasionally. But for the most part, we have to make it really easy for ourselves because both of us hate editing. So So we've like kind of found this balance that's, what's that?
Like myself.
Yeah. Oh, it's the worst. I hate it so much. So basically now we just do one take. We start the podcast. We both hit the button at the same exact time. And we just, and we've gotten good at it over the years. So we have a groove, and generally, and we both used to work for an agency where we would accidentally say like a client's name and then we'd have to go edit it out. But now we don't have to worry about that as much. And we can swear now. So like if he swears before we had to edit it out, now we don't. It's pretty much like one take. And that's really the key for us is keeping it easy. If it's easy, you'll do it. If it's not, you know, you might be ambitious early on and go, all right, we're going to, you know, I'm going to like clean up every pause. Yeah, that's not going to last, you know, unless you're just that kind of person. But I don't have time for that.
Cool. So while that's nothing, go and check out your podcast. I'll leave it in the show notes. Okay. Alpine.js.
Yeah. Alpine.
And silence. Why should we developers learn another framework? On you go.
Yeah. That's a good question.
Sorry for putting you on the spot like that.
No, please. It's a great question. It's well, it's not necessarily... It's not like Vue, React, Svelte, and Alpine. It's not another one to add to the list of frameworks everybody's using. I'm not going for that market. That's not what it does. This is a framework that sits in the middle on the spectrum of frameworks. So on the left, let's say you have jQuery or Vanilla.js, where you're doing basically, you're doing things yourself with jQuery. You're wiring up an event listener or something. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have Vue, React, Angular, big templating frameworks. They do a lot, and they're, you know, you can write SPAs with them. You can do server-side rendering, all this stuff. But there's kind of this gulf in the middle. Stimulus is the only one that I know. Well, I guess there's others addressing this gap. For people like server-side developers like me, like I work in a full-stack context, Laravel apps, very similar to Rails. Okay. Or something, Django, something like that. So for me, I'm always kind of using a hybrid of Vue.js and some of Vanilla.js and whatever. And I miss some of the simplicity of the old days with jQuery. But if I try to force myself to write Vanilla.js for all these little things like showing a button or a modal, it's just, I mean, I hate it so much. Like with Vue, you have this declarative API. You can say VIF, and you can just manipulate data and your template reacts. So I was like, I feel like there's an opportunity for this middle space. Basically, I want the templating, you know, declarative API of Vue, but without all the build, without all the complexity, without the whole entire JavaScript tsunami, you know? I want something small and simple that is flexible, that you can, you know, just add in a CDN and get up and running with 7 kilobytes of JavaScript. That's what I wanted, and I built it for me. And apparently I struck a chord. Apparently there was a need for this because lots of people are really into it and they're sort of finding the need themselves.
5,500 stars on GitHub's quite a impressive amount.
Yeah, especially given the lack of marketing. I've done almost nothing for it besides just try to make it really good itself. It just has a README. You know, I haven't even done a website. I haven't done a docs page. The README has all the docs that I write. And I haven't really done that much marketing. Occasionally people ask me to go on a podcast or something, and I do. But yeah, it's one of those odd tools with it. Like you have a good idea and everybody else thinks it's a good idea and the work is kind of done, you know? It's like not an uphill battle.
So I'm quite familiar with like Svelte. Can you compare it to Svelte if you have any experience with that?
Yeah, I actually don't have a lot of experience with Svelte. You could probably help me explain some of the differences. But in my understanding, go ahead.
Well, Svelte is something that's it's actually a compiler tool, so it outputs vanilla JavaScript. It's not like a thing you download in a browser. There are some things that can come with the browser, but it's very minimal. It's like oil, very some functionality.
Yeah, so
it's like you basically have a sort of languaging DSL Svelte files, and then there's some syntax around that, and then it outputs vanilla JavaScript. That's basically what it does.
Gotcha. So, yeah, I guess my understanding was of Svelte was that, yeah, they do the work at compile time of like tracking what parts of your DOM should change when data is updated, and then that stuff is kind of like, you know, built and then shipped with, you know, with your project. It's kind of baked in, where normally with something like Vue.js, it's all like runtime, you know, thing. Does that kind of capture what you would say?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess it's probably a little bit difficult for me to explain the differences. I think because I don't fully understand Svelte as much as I do Vue. I was a Vue programmer. I programmed a lot in Vue for like 6 years. Yeah, so I mean, Alpine is meant to be sprinkled in. It's like JavaScript sprinkles. And to my understanding, Svelte is not. Svelte would be more along the lines of Vue and React in terms of sort of owning the template. Is that
right? Yeah, I guess it'd be kind of... I don't think you could sprinkle Svelte in. It's kind of like a... You could probably chunk it in by taking the code and dumping it in there, but not something you could just like sprinkle in, like adding a CDN. Maybe you could, but... I think you'd have to grab the Svelte compiler. The Svelte compiler can run at runtime, but it's kind of large, I think.
Yeah. So I think that's probably the biggest defining characteristic. That I think Svelte is fantastic. I've watched a couple conference talks, and I follow, I forget his name, the creator of Svelte. He's brilliant. Anyway, I really admire the project. I haven't really done much myself. But in my mind, Svelte is, although it is really unique and cool in its compile time ways, but it's still very similar in feel to Vue and React in terms of you have a build process, you're probably using Babel, and you have a whole build chain, maybe using CSS and JS. You have, you know, your whole template is based on these components, and you compose them with slots and all this stuff. Like, that's sort of the same sort of deal in my mind. And I think that fits into that bigger JavaScript buy-in paradigm, where Alpine's like, just sprinkle it in here and there if you want, you know. And scale up or down as you need.
Now you've got my interest. Thanks for dealing with my hard question. It's like me getting chucked into a podcast and say, can you compare this with XYZ, you never heard of framework.js, and you know, ask to compare it with that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. It sits somewhere in the middle, and there's definitely a place for all of the entire spectrum. I think there's times when, you know, I was just going to say, I think there's times when vanilla JS is the right tool, but honestly, the more I use Alpine, it's like for 7 kilobytes, just use Alpine. Because
I'm looking at your README page right now.
Yep.
Yeah, on you go, so I keep buttoning you in.
So on the one end, JavaScript, but I guess what I was going to say is, if you're doing something a lot heavier, like Alpine's not a templating engine. It does templating, but you know, you're better off. If you really want all that power, use Vue. For an SPA, and Alpine works really well in conjunction with backend templating languages. Like, you know, I don't know, for Laravel, it's Blade, Rails, ERB templates, things like that.
It sort of reminds me of Knockout.js. Like,
yeah. A lot of people say that. I think it is in a lot of ways. Maybe the biggest difference in my mind is it doesn't use a virtual DOM. So even Knockout kind of owns the template that you use it in. Where Alpine, the way Alpine is written, there's no virtual DOM. Like with anything that uses a virtual DOM, my heart goes out to everybody listening to this who hasn't written a JavaScript framework, which is me for most of my career, and hearing things like virtual DOM and all these words, I don't know. It kind of just went over my head. But the idea is that, go ahead.
I was trying to write vanilla JavaScript components, but the bigger it got, the more I realized I was writing my own frameworks. And then it basically says, I can't do a good job as Facebook or those other frameworks. I'll just stop writing this thing.
Yeah. So I guess the point of what I'm saying about Knockout versus Alpine is Knockout uses a virtual DOM like all these other big frameworks. And basically what that translates to in practical terms is when you modify the HTML, you know, Vue is keeping track of its own DOM tree, its virtual DOM tree in memory. And then when you change data, it re-renders that DOM tree that virtual DOM tree and then writes it to the actual DOM. And React works the same way. They sort of have their own data and everything's computed up in the back end, and then there's an engine, sorry, not in the back end, in the front end runtime. Then there's an engine that will then make the changes to the DOM. Alpine doesn't have any of that. So if you flick Vue.js, if you flick the DOM, if you just remove an element with something else, it doesn't know what to do. You know, you can very easily just break the whole thing. Alpine is written very flexibly. So you could actually use another framework with it and like interact with the DOM, and Alpine will adapt. It calculates everything as it needs, and it's all real DOM, real DOM API.
So you've really got my interest peaked now. So I'm looking at the GitHub page, github.com/alpinejs/alpine, and I see you've got you got a CDN there at JS deliver Alpine 2.xx, and then you've got this thing called use dropdown model, and there's attributes here. There's an x data equals open equals false, so I guess that's the state, and then you have a button underneath that div called at click open equals true. Is that compiled to JavaScript or something?
No, not at all. that's kind of the funny thing. It's pretty much the same syntax as Vue.js, but where Vue uses V hyphen, or like Angular would use NG hyphen, I use X hyphen. And like in something like Vue, there's a whole template compiling step where it takes your template that has those directives, compiles that stuff out of it. And that's like where that whole virtual DOM thing comes in. I just leave it in. It's just part of the DOM. It's on the page. And then I'm using things even as simple as query selector to find them.
Okay, so what happens at runtime when you have something called xData equals and then curly braces open colon false?
Right. Yeah, so when you first load the page, Alpine does a sweep through the DOM. After the DOM's all loaded, it does a sweep. And this, by sweep, I mean literally I use document.querySelector all bracket x data bracket. So basically I'm saying I'm using querySelector all to find all the elements that have an x data attribute. And so then, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, on you go.
So I get all those elements, and then I new up these component classes. And so each component class is in charge of initializing itself. And I get that string out of there. So that curly brack, you know, curly brace, that JSON that's written there, like curly brace open, colon, false, or whatever. And I use something similar to eval to, you know, you can't use JSON.parse really because it's not that flexible, but something like JSON.parse. I turn that string into an actual live JavaScript object. Makes sense?
Fascinating.
And then I wrap it in an observable so that when you make changes to it, I can refresh that component after you've changed it.
Nice. And how does the at click open equals true get turned into a function event handler?
Yeah. So when I initialize the component, after I get the initial data object I just described, I walk through the DOM. So I just do like a tree walk, and I walk through each element and I check its attributes. And if there's an at attribute, I see what the event is. If it's click, I literally, you know, in the code, it's l.addEventListener, and then I pass in the event, and then the handler just runs the expression that's put in there using something like eval. And then if it modifies some piece of data... Go ahead.
8 lines of code, and it took me probably in Svelte a whole bunch more code than that, maybe 20 lines of code, and this is only 8 lines of code.
Yeah, it's like minimal to the max.
This is really cool. I like this.
And there's lots of things, you know, as I've been using it more, it's become my JavaScript Swiss Army knife. Like, let's say I wanted a date picker in a form. And I, you know, if I was using Vue.js, I might think, okay, let's search for Vue.js date pickers. And I'd search around, maybe I'd find a couple, I'd pull it in, I'd have to really tweak it and do some customization. Now, in Alpine, I would say this is maybe the new flow for me is, what are the vanilla JavaScript date pickers like out there? I would search, I would find something like pick a day, which is great, you know, time-tested.
Oh, massive fail.
What's that?
It's going to be a massive fail, man.
Oh, pick a day?
All these libraries, there's kilobytes and kilobytes, just one thing you want.
Yeah, sometimes. The thing I've found with a lot of these like vanilla JS offerings is they can be really small. Like, if that's kind of my little criteria for finding these things now, is like vanilla JS date picker. And usually what you get is a lot smaller than something that has, you know, more. But anyway, so pick a day. And then normally if you're in raw JavaScript without Alpine or anything, you would, you know, in your script tag, you'd include pick a day, and then you'd say like pick a day dot start and pass in the element. Well, in Alpine, I can make that input element just an Alpine component with an initialize function. There's Alpine X init is a directive. And then I would new up pick a day right in that, in one line. So you could literally, all of the JavaScript to initialize the pick a day library would be done directly in your single tag for that input element on the page. I don't know if that makes sense, but I'm just sort of describing that I use Alpine now to do everything I need to do, because it's such a versatile little Swiss Army knife.
This is incredible. So how can you embed JavaScript within an app mounts enter.once?
Say that again, embed JavaScript in where?
So if you look at that example under prefetching and dropdowns HTML and hover, you've got this button app mounts enter.once equals string, and then you've got fetch / dropdown partial.html.then.
Right. Yeah. So inside event handlers, you can put in any expression, and so you're familiar with eval in JavaScript?
I've used it like probably one hand amount of times.
Yeah. I imagine like every language has something like this, and it's usually considered bad and you shouldn't use it. But PHP has eval, JavaScript has eval. You can pass in a string of JavaScript and it'll get evaluated. So basically that's the short answer. I don't actually, the longer answer is I don't use eval. There's better ways to accomplish that same thing with a function, whatever. Don't have to get into it. And the other part that makes that longer is, if you'll notice, you know what, I'll just leave it at that. There's other interesting things to talk about, but I'll leave it at that answer.
Okay. So when you do X show, are you actually removing the element, or are you just doing like CSS display none?
Yeah, so in Vue.js, when you do... If you do V show in Vue.js, it's display nones. When you do VIF in Vue.js, it truly removes the element from the DOM on and off. So in Alpine, I use X show mirrors the functionality, so it display nones an element. I also have XIF, and that's sort of something else to get into. But for the most part, XShow can do everything you want to do, and it just uses display none on the tag. Yeah.
Okay. And XIF, does that destroy the element, or do you keep a reference to it somewhere in the background and then?
Right. So one of the design philosophies of Alpine, like kind of deep, like the code part. One of my philosophies is, I don't want to store any elements in memory. You know, I don't want to store references to any specific DOM elements. Everything is handled as needed. The only exception, I believe, is the root element of every component is stored in that component class. But so I say that to say that, can you repeat the question one more time?
So I was wondering if you were like storing references to DOM elements that were inside of things like XIF.
Yeah, exactly. So if you think about it, in something like Vue.js, if there's VIF and it resolves to false, Vue is already keeping track of their virtual DOM in one hand and then the real DOM in the other. So they're very capable of keeping track of an element that shouldn't be shown. But if you think about it, because like I described, Alpine is just what's on the page. If I literally removed, like you're already coming to in your head, if I remove an element in Alpine, it's gone. It's really gone. So to do that, would I need to store some reference to it to put it back? So what I actually did is I changed the API from Vue. There's a divergence, and you use a template tag. So you use a template tag that has XIF on the template tag, and then inside of that, you have your element. And that stays on the page, and then Alpine will append the actual what's inside the element, the template tag. It'll append it to the page and then remove it if it resolves to false.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Cool, man. You've got transitions as well, I see.
Yeah, the transition system is actually extremely robust, and it's probably one of those like hidden powerful features that that not that many people probably even use, but in many ways it's more robust than Vue's transition system. It's like incredibly robust.
You do data binding as well, I guess. You bind to inputs. So how does like state get propagated to all the various parts that are listening to state somehow?
Say that again. How does the state get propagated?
So say you have some state in the application, mm-hmm. and you're modifying it with some binding to an input. How does the changes get propagated to the other elements that are
sure, right? Data? Well, so here's kind of the flow. If we have a singular Alpine component, you declare some data up front, like open is false or true, and then you have multiple elements in the component. One of them changes that data, and the other one, you know, reacts to it. The other one shows something based on that. So your question is, how does it keep track of when one thing interacts with the data, how does the other thing react?
Yeah.
Okay. So like I had said before, I wrap the data in an observe. We started just using native JavaScript proxies, but now I pull in a small package by Salesforce to create an observable, which basically means I have a hook, like literally a JavaScript callback that will run anytime the underlying data is manipulated. So anywhere data is manipulated, if I call a refresh function inside of this this observable, no matter where you manipulate the data, even if you do it in like the JavaScript console, the component will update. So if you think about it, the picture you have a function called refresh component, let's say, that walks through the DOM and updates everything, you know, updates every element to match its data. Okay, so this would be like the read operation. So we have that function called refresh DOM. If I put that inside of the observer, so that anytime the data is modified, it just calls that refresh function, then you can manipulate the data from anywhere. So these event listeners, if they manipulate the data, it automatically refreshes. You could manipulate the data from an external source and it'll automatically refresh.
Some smart stuff, buddy. So yeah, did this just like evolve like over time, or did you come up with this like pretty quickly?
Yeah. So I actually, this is kind of funny. So I wrote Alpine, its basic form, which is not that far from what it is right now, in I think like a day and a half. I had the idea and then I just slammed it out. I know. It sounds like
Come on, man. Day and a half.
And it sounds like I'm a superhero developer. It is not true. it's false. I have another project, my other big project, Laravel LiveWire. And I basically already wrote Alpine for LiveWire. Like, it's different. You know, I wrote it from scratch for Alpine and there are some differences, but I already learned how to write a JavaScript front-end framework with LiveWire. I spent a year of my life writing live. Like, I just tagged 1.0 and it took me over a year to tag 1.0. And I worked on it full-time and I already learned everything. I could write a DOM walker in 2 seconds right now. I could, you know, all these things that I like slaved over, you know, had to really go through learning and understanding. So anyway, writing Alpine was easy because it was like, well, I already wrote all this stuff, you know, so.
So have you got any companies that are using it that you can share?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know lots of small businesses use it. A lot of my clients, I do like mentorship stuff and there's some sponsors, LiveWire sponsors, corporate sponsor type thing. And so a lot of those people are using it in production. Specific companies that I could, you know, say that you would know that are using it. I don't know. I really don't know. It's pretty new. It's only like I should check, probably like 3 months old, maybe. Maybe more than that. I don't know. But it's, in my mind, it's
so
like
I guess
brand
it's
new.
So from just my brief scanning of it, I think if there's any companies out there using, say, vanilla JavaScript or jQuery or Knockout, and they want to just try something cool and new, I don't see any problem just shoving this in a project and trying it out. There's virtually zero, like, I mean, the code is so lightweight, so there's not much risk of, like, people spending hours and hours doing something and then, You know, it's great for making widgets, it seems.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. If you're, you know, a WordPress developer, if you're a Rails developer, if you're a developer and you're using vanilla JavaScript, jQuery, Stimulus, or Vue in its lightest form, you know, if you're using Vue to make small little one-off, you know, components here and there, if you're doing any of those things, Alpine, you could, you know, you could throw Alpine in your app and get up and running in a minute and see if you like it or not. Very, very low buy-in required. And it really does solve that set of use cases very well. The Stimulus, jQuery, Intercooler, all those sort of intermediate frameworks.
So in terms of lifetime survivability of a project, it's important to have contributors. And what I can see is you have a whole bunch of contributors, which means that there's more security there, you know, and also the code is relatively simple in a sense because you have a whole bunch of people that are able to commit to it, which is nice.
Yeah, that is actually really nice. With LiveWire, my other project, it's a really ambitious PHP project, and there's a lot of JavaScript. Like I said, I basically wrote Alpine. Its first initial iteration is very similar to LiveWire. But all the people consuming LiveWire are mostly PHP devs who aren't as into JavaScript because LiveWire caters to people not that into JavaScript. So with LiveWire, it's kind of a lot of me doing the work, and there weren't that many deep pull requests, you know, on the front end side. But Alpine, because it is purely a JavaScript framework, has no ties to any other back end language at all. There's a much wider, you know, audience of JavaScript developers and people willing to pitch in. So there's been, right now, there's like four core people. It's too early to define like a core team or anything, but there's four people who, they read every issue, they write PRs all the time. They're just constantly working on Alpine, more than I do. They work on Alpine more than I do. It's pretty crazy. So I was just going to say, I just found somebody publishing an Alpine newsletter, and it was a very funny moment because I just stumbled on it and I signed up for an Alpine newsletter. I was like, this is hilarious. But go on.
Yeah, if somebody wants to make a Learn With Us newsletter, I'll sign up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Learn With Us pod Twitter account that I haven't bothered to get off Ken yet, but I don't have time to manage another Twitter account, so I'm just... If there's anyone using going to that podcast, that Twitter account, just go to Nikos Katsikanis. That's a Twitter account for Learn With Us.
Gotcha. Nice. Yep. That's a lot to manage otherwise.
It's important that for survivability of projects, it's good to have financial backing. And I see you have a whole bunch of sponsors for this, which shows that people really love it.
Yeah. So the sponsorship thing, that's kind of new as of the last... 3 months, actually, because I just got my first payout yesterday. Yesterday was the first GitHub sponsors payout, and it was $12,000. So it's not I'm not, you know, able to just focus completely on these projects without, you know, doing side things. But still, it's still a good chunk. So it started with LiveWire when I, you know, was working on LiveWire. I had a lot of people into it and interested, and people would message me all the time, hey, you know, we want to support the project. Do you have a Patreon? And I was just so resistant to do something that I knew wouldn't really not work. Like I could set up a Patreon and I could get, you know, 20 people at, you know, $5 cups of coffee, whatever. But is it worth it, you know, to manage all that for $50 a month or to $100 a month? That it just never felt like that. But then GitHub came out with GitHub sponsors, and I felt like it was a little more, you know, like everybody's already on GitHub. I'm already on GitHub. Felt like it wasn't a separate service, really. Thought like, why not just start it? And then over the past probably 6 months before I opened this GitHub sponsors, I kept a list of people who told me they want to support me but can't. So I kept this list, and then I put the GitHub sponsors out and I emailed everybody and I said, hey, so you can actually support me now if you want. If you were serious about that, here you go. And so then I basically just started experimenting with that. And ever since, so I put out another package called Sushi. That was just a little like one-off package that people really wanted access to the code base. I just wrote it for fun. And I said, okay, well, why don't we make it... Actually, my buddy Daniel on our podcast, we came up with this together, mostly him. He said, why don't you just charge for... why don't you charge for Sushi, this package? Put out there and say, hey, I'm going to put it out to only my GitHub sponsors. It's restricted to only GitHub sponsors. But once I hit 75 sponsors, it'll be open source. So we called it Sponsorware. I did that, and that I met that level in like 2 days. So I basically upped my annual income by 11 grand by writing a small package and calling it sponsorware. So I've sort of been trying that model, and I'm going to continue trying that model to build up this sponsor base. So I'm saying all that to say that I'm also adding value in other places. It's not just people finding Alpine and going, oh, I'll just give him money, you know?
Sweet. Well, I think I'll try it. Next on a project is to see how it works. I'm very curious to have an almost zero opt-in framework. Is there any tooling available for it, or any WebStorm plugin, Visual Studio Code, that kind of stuff? I guess not.
No, there's nothing, because there's no real need. I guess the one thing that could be cool would be like Alpine DevTools, that you could, you know, easily track the state of all your different components on your page. And that stuff I'd like to do at some point, but no, yeah, you can't. And a note, if let's say you wanted a more complex component, you could bundle your JavaScript and export a function, like a global function, and then reference that as your data object. And then you could actually do some pretty solid things. So a lot of people who use Alpine and really push its limits, they do that. They have a full build with Webpack and everything that exports these component functions, where each component has a function that basically spits out that data object that has methods in it and all sorts of stuff. So they can basically, it feels like Vue. I know I'm throwing a lot at you right there, but that's like another sort of usage that people, or use case people have.
So what's your vision for this? I dare to call it framework.
Yeah, so in the immediate right now, I want to get a really nice page up, but I'm holding off on some of these things for maybe a month or two. But in a month or two, I want to really push the polish of it, so make it feel very much like a first-class framework in terms of a really nice docs page and some screencasts and stuff like that. Lots of examples. So I want to do that stuff. I've done that with Livewire, and I'm finishing doing that. And then I'm going to sort of embark on that journey with Alpine. And as far as I want it to stay where it is, I don't want it to grow. I don't want it to become Vue. You know, there's lots of PRs I get all the time. People say like, oh, Vue can do this, we should put this in Alpine. And most of the time I sort of push back, like, you know, because there is a point where you're just recreating Vue.js, and at that point just use Vue. So I want it to be lightweight. I want it to live in the middle. It's not going to compete with Vue or React on that scale, on that level. But there's lots of people who've been like, yeah, like this, you know, I just backed out of Vue in my small app or my marketing page or my, you know, back-end app. And Alpine is just the thing to do it. It's the ticket. So I should
maybe
also mention...
We could do like a YouTube video, and maybe I get you in the call and you just... guide me through some of the stuff if you want. I'll build a little simple app or something, and
yeah, that would be really fun. Just like stream it or something, and I'll, you know, I could watch you sort of like encounter Alpine for the first time.
Yeah, man. Cool. I've got a tight schedule tonight, so anything else you want to share? We'll definitely have you on again.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. If you're a Laravel developer, check out Livewire. If you're a coder, check out No Plans to Merge podcast. And if you write any amount of JavaScript, check out Alpine. And that's all for me. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, it's good. I'm excited to have you on, Caleb. And all listeners out there, you've got to go check out his podcast, because if he's that good, he can churn out that kind of code in 1.5 days, and what he says in a podcast must be very good as well. So
maybe.
Get over there right
half
now.
Half of it's garbage, warning. No, half of it's just us like joking around about random stuff. But yes, check it out. Please do.
Okay, mate. Stay safe. See you around.
All right. You too.
Bye. Okay, everybody. Thanks for joining Laravel with us. We'll see you again shortly. Bye-bye.